If you had the chance of choosing to have any meal you wanted, anything, all right, doesn't matter what it is, what food would you choose if you could eat anything right now? What would it be? What would it be? What would it be? Oh, sorry? Egg and bacon. Egg and bacon. So somebody hasn't had their breakfast yet. That's right. Egg and bacon. Egg and bacon. Anything. What would you have? What would you have? Fish and chips. Egg and bacon. This is very English, isn't it? I like this. A roast dinner. Yeah, we're not like normal people in our house. We don't have a roast dinner on a Sunday. We just have a sandwich. How great is that? What would you have? What would you have?
Bacon and egg.
I think that we've got two votes for that so far, so we're doing all right. Oh, what would you have? What would you have?
A cream tea.
Pizza.
You know what? Nobody said a Rivita yet so far. What would you have? What would you eat?
Sausages.
Yeah. Anybody else like sausages? Yeah. Look, lots of people like sausages. That's good. Yeah. If you could eat, what about Mr. Drummer? What would you eat? A full eat. All right, a full eat. So we might get faster and faster with the drums as we go through. Well, just imagine. You see, when Jesus said, I will build my church, did he have this in mind? Well, your vicar's saying no. It must. If your vicar says no, it must be no. Well, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's not important. But the first church, the very first church, was not like this church. The first church met in a house, or lots of houses. And usually they met in the biggest house because they had the most space. So they'd meet in a big house and they'd have their meal. And usually it was a great grand affair. And then at the end of their meal, what they would do is, this is where I realise I've done this wrong because my hands are fully occupied now. Thank you, Ian. What they would do is, they'd have their meal, they'd be sat around a dining room table, maybe. They'd have children running around, everybody would be together, and they'd stop. And they'd take some bread, usually flatbread, and they'd break it, and they'd say two words, remember me. And then they'd take some wine, and they'd pour the wine out, and they'd say, remember me. And so whenever you have your communion service or your breaking of bread or your Eucharist or the Lord's Supper, whatever you like to call it, and everybody calls it something different, whenever you have that, it's all about remember me. And today, we don't have a great big feast and then bread. We have a tiny little wafer. And a little time, we have it in real moderation, don't we? But that doesn't matter, because we can still remember Jesus. Remember that he died for us. Remember that he's alive now. That his body was broken. That he shed his blood. That we might be forgiven. That we might be set free. That we might have a new life. So every time we take that little tiny bit, we remember Jesus. When we're at home and we have a great big meal, you know what you can do at the end of your meal? You can remember Jesus. And what we're thinking about today is not just the grown-ups remembering me, but the little ones remembering me. So how is it that children or young people or people like us, how do we find faith? How does that happen? Well, Deuteronomy tells us. It says you talk about the things about God at home. You teach them. You talk about them at home when you get up and when you go to bed, when you have a meal, when you're walking down the street, when you're walking home again. You even decorate your whole house with the things of God, and you get your kids involved in God's stuff. And then, if you carry on reading Deuteronomy chapter 6, you get to verse 20, and it says, later on, in the future, your son will ask you, what is all this stuff about? But you know, they have to have a context in which they're going to work out how they're going to find faith. And that happens when they're young. You grow them up with God's things, and when they get to that point of saying, how does it all make sense? They've got a framework upon which to decide. I grew up in Manchester. It's a lovely place. If you haven't visited it, please do. Don't spend too long there, but do visit. And we grew up right next to the brewery, right in the middle of Manchester, a place called Colliest. And then they knocked it down with the slum clearances, and they built a sink estate on the north of Manchester and thought, wouldn't it be great to put everybody there? So they did, 12,000 people, and that's where we grew up. And I think I was the first person from the estate, the first one to go to university. You can imagine how popular I was. And I went to university, and I used to do a lot of painting because I thought I was good at that. And my art teacher said, whatever you do, Steve, don't do art. Do engineering. So I did engineering, but somebody said to me, would you paint me a picture? Oh, fantastic, I thought, I can do that, I like that. Will you paint me a picture of Jesus? What? Okay, but Jesus on the cross. Oh, well, I'll have a go. So I thought, I'll have a go, and I went to find somebody I knew who was a bit religious. That's all I knew about him. Well, there's two things I knew about him. He was a bit religious, and he was a bit odd. Or at least I thought that. And I said, can you give me some pictures of Jesus on the cross? And his face went white because nobody had asked him that sort of question before. And he said, here. And he gave me a Bible. He said, read that. So I did. I read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and I got to Deuteronomy, and I struggled a bit. So I knocked on his door, and I said, thanks very much. And he said, what have you done? I said, I've read Genesis and Exodus. He said, oh, no, start at Matthew. What's Matthew? It's later on in the New Testament. What's the New Testament? Oh, so I did. I read Matthew, and I read Mark, and Luke, and John, and I kept reading till Revelation. And then I started at the beginning again, and I kept reading until I got to Isaiah. And I got to Isaiah chapter 55, got to verse 6, looking for stuff about Jesus, and it said this, seek the Lord while he may be found, call upon him while he's near. And you know, in my room at university that night, I knew God had spoken to me. I don't know how, but I knew God had said something through this ear book. So I knelt down and I prayed a prayer in my own words and I became a Christian. So then I knocked on this guy's door and I gave him the Bible back. I said, I've used it. It's worked. Thanks very much. And he gave me back. He said, oh, no. Now you've got to go to church. Church? What do I want to go to church for? He said, well, that's what you do. And he took me to a church, the nearest one. And I got to the church door and they looked at me and they said, oh, you better go with the children. I said, what do you mean with the children? He said, we've got no one to teach them this morning. You can do that. So I was in with the children, and I thought, what do I teach them? So I said, well, you've got to have a book like this one, and you start reading at Matthew, and you get to Revelation, then you start from the beginning all the way, and then you get to Isaiah, you get to chapter 55, verse 6, and then then you become a Christian. That's all there is to it. That's it. Happy days. Let's go back now. That's how much I knew. And I thought everybody found faith just like that. But that's a bit of a weird story, isn't it? Scripture Union have got a lovely little book, Top Tips on Helping a Child Respond to Jesus. And it says there's four ways. I don't think there's four ways. I think there's four gazillion ways. But it says there's four ways children find faith. First way is a Damascus Road experience, like painting a picture, a one-off experience where you come to a point on the 23rd of November 1980 where you make a decision and you follow Jesus. And some people are like that. That's me. It might be you, it might not be, I don't know. Some people are like that. And they say some children are like that, but not many children are like that. So they talk about the Paul experience of finding faith. Then they talk about the Peter experience of finding faith. I'll follow you anywhere, Jesus, says Peter. I'll step out of the boat into water. I'll do anything. I'll draw my sword and cut someone's ear off. How bonkers is that? But I'll do anything to follow Jesus, except when he's going to be crucified, and I'll deny him. And then when he's risen, I'll jump in the water and I'll swim over. And it's that idea of three steps forward, two steps back. Three steps forward, or passionate for Jesus on a Sunday, but when I'm in school on a Monday, don't say anything about that. And they talk about the Peter experience. And then they also talk about the Timothy experience. You've known the scriptures since you were a child. You've not known anything different. You've grown up in the faith. You're part of what's going on. You're right there. But if I asked you for a day when you became a Christian, you'll say, I don't know. I've always been there. Are you a Christian? Absolutely. Do you love Jesus? Yes. Has he died for you? Yes. But you don't know when, because you grew up within the environment, within the family. And they suggest, for most people, that's the norm. They also talk about the Thomas model. Unless I see the holes, unless I put my hand in his side, I will not believe. You know, prove it to me. And you're often working with young people. Prove it, prove it, prove it. Some people need that proof. So they talk about four ways, but by and large, a lot of people find faith by growing up in the household of God, discussing the things of God when you get up, when you go to sleep, when you're walking down, seeing the visual signs, mulling it over before you get to that point of knowing for yourself that it's real. So how does that work with communion? Well, shouldn't that be part of what children experience? As they're processing and learning and understanding and growing in their faith? Shouldn't that be part of that? Or do we say, oh, wait for confirmation? Which is a reasonable thing to say. Most of us here have had to do that. Interestingly, after I became a Christian, I went to this church. I went to lots of churches indeed, because we were involved in itinerant work. So we were involved with the Anglicans, lovely people they are too, and the Methodists, who are equally lovely as well, especially on whenever you do your communion, and the Baptists, and the Assemblies of God, and the Church of the Nazarene, and the Brethren. We were involved with all sorts of people, and Easter people, and Spring Harvest, and New Wine, and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, everybody has their own way of doing communion. And some of them call it different names, too. And everyone's passionate about it. Oh, it means something. It's really special, and it is. And everybody's right, even though it's different from everybody else. But sometimes it's not so important, the rules and the regulations, as what it's all about, remembering Jesus. So we would travel around doing all sorts of different things, seeing different ways of it being done. And what we do realize is that the one thing that everybody has in common with communion is that it's about Jesus. It's about Jesus being in the center of all that we do. So should we let children enjoy this? Well, lots of denominations do already. We in our denomination have said that we wait for confirmation. But in recent years, we've said, you don't have to do that. As a church, you might decide to do it differently. You might let children be part of communion. It's up to you. You can make that decision. Apply to the bishop. The bishop says yay or nay. Usually yay if you've thought it all through carefully enough. And yes, you can do that. You can do that if you choose to do that. So why wouldn't you? Well, look how little they are. Will they really understand? Do I really understand? I think if we asked everybody in the room here, what does communion mean to you? We'll get 60 different answers. It means different things to different people at different stages at different times. And how much do you need to know before you can really appreciate something? We have a television in our house. We've got one telly and 12 radios. We've got a telly in our house. I don't know how that visual signal gets on that. I've got no idea how it works. It doesn't stop me using the button and watching TV. I watch my football. Great. How much do you need to know before you really use something, enjoy something, appreciate something? I was given a new phone by the diocese. Here's your new phone, Steve. Lovely. How do you switch it on? I don't know 95% of how it works, but I can make a phone call and I can send a text. So I can understand a little bit, but I can still use something, enjoy something. How much does a child need to know before they can really enjoy communion? Well, maybe they need to know that Jesus died for them. If they've got that understanding, maybe that's enough to start on that process, that journey of knowing for themselves that they belong to God. Some people say, well, will they respect it? Will they treat it with the dignity that it deserves? Do you know, I think they will if we do. Children often take their norms from us, don't they? We used to do a lot of children's work, travel around doing lots of children's work at one stage, and there's one place where we're about, think of a room about six times bigger than this, jam-packed full of children. And we got to a stage where we're working with these children every single day, and we were worn out. But we get to a point where it's story time, and we gather them all together in as tight a circle as possible, and then we tell them a story. And there was chaos going on, and in my natural state, I was marching around shouting at everyone, come on over here, come on, sit down over here. And it was just chaos. And an elderly gentleman took a seat, put it in the middle of the room, sat down, opened a book, and said, and started talking to them about this book. And you know, they all came, all the children. And he just spoke in a very quiet voice. And they calmed down. That whole room took their norm from that one man. Or that whole room took their norm from this one man. Shouty, loud, noisy. Children will reflect the environment that they're in. And if they see you being respectful about God's things, they will be respectful. What about confirmation? Does that not count anymore? Confirmation does count. And what we're saying is if young people, if young children want to be part of your communion, if you want to be part of that with them, then maybe you need to be saying, please do take communion with us, and we want to be working with you, thinking with you, talking with you, discussing, engaging when you get up, when you go to bed, Deuteronomy 6. We want to be talking with you about the point when you will be when you'll stand up for yourself and say, Jesus is mine. So confirmation isn't lost. We're thinking now about a process that lasts more than just one moment, but might be 3 years, whatever. I think also, we've got a lot we can learn from children. I belong to a fairly large church. It's usually quite full. And there was one time we fell out. We fell out big time over something. And we thought, how do we sort this out? So we invited somebody really clever to come to our church and talk to us. But we said, he's not going to talk to the leadership. He's not going to talk to the church. He's going to talk to everybody. Everybody. So we got everybody together. Thursday evenings, two Thursday evenings, and we got the adults and the youth, we had a big youth group, children, got them all in, packed in there, and this man talked to us to help us work out how we could get on together about this one issue that we were struggling about. And everything was great. We were doing really, really well. And on the last session,
just before we finished, a gentleman in our church, he's a lovely man, very well respected, he stood up, he said, "Excuse me." I said, "Yes, I want to say something." "Yes, yes." "I can never, ever, ever receive communion from somebody I was in disagreement with." And everyone sort of stopped and looked and said, "It's got nothing to do with communion, this. What are you talking about?" And we're all a bit stuck on that one. And then we're thinking, what does that mean? So I'm talking to my daughter in the car on the way back. "What do you think about that?" And excuse the way she thought, I'll tell you what she said. She said, "Oh, you know." I said, "I don't know what." She said, "Well, he's just a bit up himself, really." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, he's got it all wrong." I said, "What do you mean?" "Oh, it's not about who gives it to you. It's not about who receives it. It's about the gift. It's about Jesus." I thought, why haven't I seen that? Why have I never seen that? Why am I trying to be God's policeman? You can and you can't. And why am I not focusing on the gift? So the next week I was doing a service and they wanted something on communion. So I thought, hey, you'll never guess what. We had this big falling out in my church. So we got this man. And I told him what my daughter said. So this is what my daughter, and I said, "It's about the gift." A week afterwards, I had a letter from the vicar. I don't know if I'm going to get a letter from the vicar a week after this. I got a letter from the vicar saying, "Dear Steve, thank you very much for your talk. There were three people in church that Sunday morning who have refused to take communion ever since I arrived because they didn't like the look of me. That Sunday, they took communion. It's taken 6 years. Isn't it interesting what you can learn from a young one?" You know, instead of just thinking about whether we will give permission to these young ones for them to take part, I think maybe we could be thinking, what is there that we can learn from these young ones as they take part? Yes, it's a difficult decision, and I realise that, and you've got to think on balance, what would you think the best thing would be for the young ones within your church here? But I'd look at Deuteronomy and say, talk about the things of God, get that ingrained within what people are doing. It gives them a framework to work with. And I'd say, think very hard about it. And think very carefully about it. And come to a decision together. And whatever you decide, go forward together. But there's a great opportunity there. There's a lovely children's workers trainer called Penny Frank. Some of you may know about her. And she talked about being a little girl carted around by her dad because he was a vicar. And she'd say she'd sit on the front row, lots of different churches, and she'd see her dad break the bread. And she said, "I could see the crumbs break into the air when he broke the bread." And she said, "I'd see my dad, and he'd pour the wine out. And when it was a beautiful sunny day," she said, "on some occasions, I'd see the sun sparkling through the wine." And she said, "It was the most magical thing. And when I saw the bread," and a five-year-old girl, "when I saw the bread being broken and the wine being poured, I knew Jesus died for me." What do you need to know to take communion? So with my girls, who are grown up now, we'd say to the eldest one at some stage, "Would you like to take communion?" "Oh, yes." "Why is that?" "Well, I think it will bring me closer to God." "Lovely." To our younger one, "Would you like to take communion?" "Not really." "Why is that?" "Not very hungry." So we have one child who I think was ready for receiving communion, and one who wasn't. If you decide to go ahead here, the norm in most parishes is to have, maybe every year or every couple of years, you run a little class. Maybe the vicar might do it. Maybe somebody else might do it. You have a little group, meet for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. You discuss all of this stuff. And then at the end of the course, of the children who are taking part in that course, get parents along as well. It's a great thing to do. You sort of have a discussion about, are you ready to receive communion? Mum and Dad, do you think they're ready? And for those that are ready, you accept them in. It's not that anybody coming through the door is accepted in. It's part of growing in the household of faith. And we're not God's policemen, policewomen. We have a gift. We want to share our gift in whatever way we can. So I'd encourage you to think about it. I've not come across any churches that have struggled with this once they've started it. But usually the biggest angst is in deciding whether you're going to do it or not. And once you've made the decision, it tends to be there's no more angst. Think it through. It doesn't do away with confirmation. It does help a child think carefully about what it really means to belong to Jesus. They can take it seriously. And there are things we could learn too. It's a good opportunity. And a good opportunity for a discussion too. Thank you, Ian.